Marcia Rader Brantley went missing in spring 2009, and no one reported her missing for about half a year, not even her husband. Last week, we reviewed the theory of cognitive dissonance and how it applies to survivors of domestic violence, helping them to reconcile the stress they feel from cognitive inconsistencies. Two prevalent thought patterns include reframing the perpetrator's actions or intent as being more benevolent, and their own actions as being problematic, thus resolving to work harder on making their partner happy. The other includes survivors telling themselves that relationships involve hard work, so it's normal to have to put in the amount of effort they are required to do to keep that relationship functioning. Throughout all of the interviews I've conducted over the past year, both her friends and family discussed how Marcia considered marriage to be honored, sacred, which you heard directly from some of them during one of the victim profile episodes. Marcia also had these family histories of both her mother and aunt marrying late in life and having strong, loving marriages. It was as if these elements went together. Marcia married late, which would imply she waited until she met the right man. If she divorced or left him, it would mean the breaking of her family history. It would mean admitting that she made a bad choice, and it would mean her perception that she would be going against her faith. It would be much easier for her to resolve her dissonance by accepting blame for the problems herself and fixing them. Welcome to Targeted, True Crime Podcast. We tell stories of those who were targeted by abuse and investigate cases of family violence using academic research to interpret the events. As a college professor, I think we need to stop making family violence a secret. It's time to tell our stories, use our experiences to help, heal, and provoke change. Targeted discusses sensitive information about abuse. Listener discretion is advised. I'm Mo Blackwell, the host of Targeted. One of the ways I wanted to see how Marcia dealt with cognitive inconsistencies was to see how she generally wrote about them in her blog, as well as how she wrote about those concerning Donnie and her marriage. The words chosen by someone can reveal much about the mental state. Sometimes it is revealed through looking at their specifically chosen words. Sometimes it's from looking at the themes revealed in their words. And sometimes it's by looking at word choices they probably wouldn't have consciously chosen, but will show something about their subconscious state. Pouring through the blog, there is a lot of evidence of Marcia engaging in lowering her cognitive dissonance in a number of areas. For instance, she is pretty overt about this in an entry she wrote about a year before she disappeared. She's talking herself through from feeling dissatisfied in life to be more conscious of thinking about the good.
March 7th, 2008. Thankful. I just listened to Josh Groban's Thankful and started to think about how incredibly blessed I am. Here I sit on a rainy, drippy day, but I slept in a warm, dry bed, ate what I wanted for breakfast, have the best hubby in the world, and live relatively pain-free. As far as I know, I'm disease-free, can move around under my own power, drive a dependable car, have money for food and medicine. The list just goes on and on. I challenge myself and you to go through this day being thankful. When a sticky situation presents itself, try to turn it around and see some kind of blessing in it. Hard to do sometimes, but usually possible. Have a thankful day.
Here is another example.
December 4th, 2008. Life is interesting on its dullest day. Even when we drudge through the ordinariness of life, it takes turns we never see coming, and rewards us with memories, not all good, that compel us forward.
One of the themes I noticed is that it's fairly common for Marcia to have dissonant thoughts about the quality of her writing compared with her urge to write. She expresses doubt about her talent. She considers herself to be a writer, but not sure if others will want to read her words, so she talks herself through a line of thinking that allows her to continue writing by minimizing the need for acceptance by others.
November 7th, 2008. Sometimes you're the windshield, sometimes you're the bug. Well, today I feel like the windshield. I just finished a short story I like and we're going camping in a couple of hours. The short story I mentioned seemed like a long time coming. I think I may have a story I'm okay with now. I'll likely submit it to a contest and hope for the best. Whether it wins or not, I wrote something I like, and sometimes that just has to be enough.
In another, she confesses that most days she has an inner voice telling her that she will never be published, but she's learned to ignore it. Or she gives in for a moment, but returns to writing pretty soon after. She says she's stubborn and all roads lead back to her writing. In a blog post where Marcia lists her best qualities, she reveals what are crucial characteristics of how she views herself. It follows that she would expect her actions to be consistent with the important aspects of who she is.
March 19th, 2008. What's your point? Most people tend to be so negative about themselves, usually without merit. Here's a question for everyone who tunes in today. What are six of your strong points? Here's mine. Number one, I love fiercely. Number two, I'm loyal. Number three, I'm curious. Number four, I write pretty good dialogue. Number five, I'm charitable. Number six, I know I have strong points. How about you?
First quality is that she loves fiercely. Second, she's loyal. There would be a high cognitive demand that she should behave consistently with these ideals of herself. With this in mind, let's turn slightly to discuss more of Marcia's specific cognitions about her relationship with Donnie.
March 12th, 2008. Morning. It's early, the sun's coming up, and I'm through with exercise. Phew! I'm thinking about how blessed I am to have a wonderful marriage. Word has been sifting through lately of a relative who refuses to work on her marriage and insists on getting a divorce. Life is good, but often too short. Comfortable things come and then go in our lives. I plan to enjoy my dog's whiskers when they brush my face today to give me kisses. I plan to get excited when I hear my husband's voice on the phone when he calls me to see how my day is going.
Notice she dislikes that a family member refuses to work on her marriage. This is a conscious word choice, refuse to work. It's not a matter of the relative trying, but it didn't work, and there's no consideration of the husband should have worked as well. It's the wife, and she refused. You can see how Marcia separates herself from this type of action, because Marcia works on her marriage. Later, she says she plans to get excited when she hears her husband's voice on the phone. It's not that she will be excited, but she will work at being excited. It's something that you might not notice with the first reading, but if you go back and look at it, you can see how this ties together. Her relative refuses to work, and Marcia is planning to get excited when she hears her husband's voice. It's pretty clear she is cognitively working through this idea that divorce is not acceptable. So here she's very aware of the cognitive dissonance and how she's dealing with it. So you can see again that she is cognitively working through things unpleasant. However, we still go forward and life will be okay. About 1.5 years before she disappeared, Marcia wrote about her birthday in a blog post. This one has Donnie in an active role in a positive way, in which she definitely sees them as a pair together. She says,
February 27th, 2008. Birthday Eve. My wonderful husband brought me a birthday Eve gift. I love flowers, and he brought home roses tonight. I have a big basket in our bedroom filled with flower petals, buds, his corsage from our wedding, and pieces of my bouquet. I've even thrown in a few thorns, just 'cause love ain't always easy. When these roses fade, they'll make their way into the basket as well. I expect that by the time I die, the basket will be overflowing with the fragrance of a beautiful love affair.
You can witness a processing she does here about marriage difficulties. She has had to deal with enough problems that she made a literal representation to remind her that marriage is hard. So this literal representation is putting actual thorns in with the flowers. It's bad enough that she needed a way to visually ground herself that the problems, the thorns, were natural and part of what is expected to be experienced in marriage. She has talked herself into accepting the thorns as normal. Note also, she sees them as a united couple. She talks about our bedroom. She successfully engages in reconciling some of her dissonance about problems in marriage, and we can see that 15 months before she's missing, she very much accepts this idea, this narrative. She's talked herself into it. As a side note, I wondered what had happened to the basket of dried flowers and thorns. After Marcia had been missing for about 3 years, her family got access to her house, and many of Marcia's things were still there, just stuffed into closets inside of trash bags. No one remembered seeing the flowers, and I don't see them in the videos taken of the house while the family was sorting things. We think Donnie probably just threw that basket away. When I examined Marcia's blog, about 20% of her entries mention Donnie in some way. Sometimes it's an entire entry about him, other times he appears in a paragraph, other times he's just in one sentence out of many. Of those blog posts in which Donnie appears, the most prevalent theme is one in which she presents him as almost a hero. It's not just that he's a competitive bike rider, but he's the best bike rider. If he falls in a race, it's because some villain interfered and messed him up, or because the officials don't know how to run a proper race, or because the heat was too intense, and though normally Donnie is impervious to heat, it was particularly bad that day, so even Superman Donnie was affected. Here are a couple examples.
February 10th, 2008. Proud wife. I'm so proud of my hubby. He races bicycles and has been in training since New Year's Day. Since then, he's lost, drumroll please, 31 pounds. Yes, 31 pounds. Me? I've lost 7 pounds. I can't be too jealous, though, since he spends hours riding and has cut way back on his calorie intake. I like my calories. April 22nd, 2008. Very proud wife. As mentioned a few days ago, Donnie had a bike race last weekend up around Knoxville. He did a time trial in the rain and then a 40-plus mile bike race in the afternoon. Now, bike racing is divided by categories and everyone has to start in Category 5 to prove themselves. It usually takes about 10 races to move up to Category 4. Donnie has placed so high in the races he's done this year, they went ahead and bumped him to Category 4 after only a few races. I'm so proud of him. He has a great tenacity as well as being a talented athlete. Way to go, baby!
This theme of the spouse being a hero, or the spouse's good qualities are magnified, are overblown. I want to return to this theme in another episode to get at it from another angle. I think it serves two functions. One is cognitive clarification, in which the survivor puts their partner on a pedestal in an attempt to self-convince how wonderful he or she is. I think there's another function, too, that occurred to me as I was reading through Marcia's words. I haven't seen it researched anywhere, but I haven't had a chance to look in depth yet. I'm thinking about it as reverse gaslighting, in which a survivor tries a type of classical conditioning by excess praising of the perpetrator, hoping that he or she will be influenced to continue with positive pro-social actions, similar to how we might do with kids or even with dog training. We reward the positive and ignore the negative sometimes. Through this, we hope that the positive will become more prevalent. But the consequence in a domestic violence situation, I wonder if it might be that the perpetrator does come to believe that he or she is that wonderful, the hero, without bothering to change any of their negative actions. Instead, it helps them to frame them as being okay because they're so good that nothing they do would be all that bad. It's going to take more time, thought, and research to flesh out this idea, and perhaps I'll find out it has been discussed in academic literature, but I just haven't found it yet. Anyways, Marcia lavishes praise on Donnie. She talks about him as an amazingly wonderful and patient husband. Let's listen to a poem she wrote in which she compares herself to a house that needed to be repaired and Donnie as the craftsman who fixed it, her.
Several years ago, I wrote a poem in a creative writing class I took. Now, I'm not a poet, and you all know it, but here it is anyway. Just a small way of telling the world how much I love that man. Donnie's Valentine. I've seen you work on broken structures and make them good as new. You see a sagging roof and know just what to do. You cut a piece of plywood to fit an empty hole and make the place look better. No one would ever know that just a moment earlier, the gaping hole was there. And because of your experience, you made it disappear. When you first laid eyes on me, you must have thought, oh no, this house will be much harder and cost a lot of dough. You went to work immediately. You didn't waste much time. Some filler here, some patchwork there. You really took your time. I was more resistant, not believing this was real. That someone really gave a damn, this was too good a deal. Everything you touch becomes a masterpiece. My heart is no exception. Your handiwork is there. No nail, no saw, no harsh tool was used, just hugs to hold things in place. Our walks and talks and memories are the tools you chose to use. You filled up all the empty space with love so pure and true. I can but only thank my God I fell in love with you.
On the surface, this sounds like a really nice, wonderful poem that would make us think highly of Donnie. But do you see the cognitive dissonance reconciliation that's going on here? She is the only one who created problems, and he is the one who is fixing them nicely, perfectly. He has to change her in order to make her acceptable. If she admitted that they both bring problems to the marriage, then it would create much more cognitive stress on her. By accepting all the bad on herself and imparting all the good intentions to Donnie, she can resolve to do better, and then the marriage will be better. Through the blog posts, again, we have evidence of how Marcia works through her dissonance and finds a way to resolve inconsistencies. You persevere, you plow through, you don't give up, you keep working. This is something strong, independent women do. We shoulder blame and we work. I see this in entry after entry in what Marcia writes. Whether she's talking about her writing, whether she's talking about Donnie, we can see her working through problems and shouldering the blame herself. Notably, the theme of Donnie as a hero peters out in the last 5 months of her blog. Nowhere in 2009 is this glowing image. From a communication standpoint, it seems as if she is no longer engaging with the cognitive dissonance by bolstering up Donnie. Essentially, she ignores him. In fact, he only appears a few times in the 2009 blog posts at all. She mentions that he went to a movie with her and won. In a second, she mentions that she wants him to be the one to kill an unwanted rodent in their yard. And in a third, she reminisces about their wedding 9 years previously. In the anniversary post, She is not glowing about him. She has fond memories about the wedding itself, but Donnie is strangely absent from these memories, except that they didn't get to eat much at the reception and that Donnie picked up a nasty bug while on their honeymoon. To me, this clues me in that there had probably been excessive complaining and she had had to cognitively work through to process this. She should be happy that they were just married, but he's complaining about not eating. Oh, since he's a good man, it's probably just because Donnie physically needed food, his blood sugar was down to his toes, and it wasn't his fault he was grumpy. We should be enjoying our honeymoon, but Donnie is sick and complaining, and I had to spend the honeymoon taking care of him. But I can't be sorry for myself because he's the poor guy who is sick. I should be grateful that I'm not sick. I should be glad that I can help him because this is a particularly bad bug and he must feel awful. There are no positive memories of Donnie that she specifically mentions in this blog post. After she gives her memories of the wedding and honeymoon, this is when she says,
I remember Donnie and I saying how much we looked forward to getting past the wedding and getting on with real life. 9 years later, a lot of water has gone under that bridge, equal parts happy and sad, and I love him more than I ever thought possible. Happy anniversary, baby. I love you.
So again, she really hasn't offered any happy memories that include Donnie specifically as being active in it. Only happy memories of her friends and family being at the wedding.
The happiest day of my life, I was cocooned by family and friends.
And mildly negative memories about Donnie in particular.
2 months later, we went to Cancun for a week where Donnie picked up a nasty bug.
Combining that with the marriage being equal parts happy and sad, it seems like she's cognitively working through being in an unhappy marriage, but minimizing to convince herself that this is normal. She ends with,
I love you.
Because she does love him. It's just that there's little evidence he loved her. She knows it deep down, but compensates for it because it's stressful. She's no longer painting the rosy, heroic picture of him, though, probably because things are too difficult with him to allow her to make those mental gymnastics anymore. Instead, she's on to the milder,
equal parts happy and sad,
idea, and then avoids mentioning him. Her words in her blog also indicate other shifts in her cognitive clarifications. We've already talked about specific word choices and themes in words. We also can talk about how words can reveal how someone feels about a relationship, even though that's not a conscious choice to use or to not use certain words. For instance, pronouns that people use to describe relationships are very enlightening. If somebody talks about us or we or our, they're linking themselves together as a team, a matched pair. Marcia often uses we or us or our about Donnie in the early parts of her blog. In fact, almost every month in 2008 has her verbally uniting them as a team with these words. But when it comes to 2009, she does not use the word us at all when referring to Donnie, and she only uses the word we when talking about their wedding. But even in that one, the we is referencing the past, in which she's saying things such as,
we intended a smallish wedding. We looked forward to getting past the wedding and getting on with real life.
So these we's refer to them as a pair 9 years ago, not as a pair now. She uses our once in 2009 when she mentions our backyard. It's a post in which she wants Donnie to kill a rodent in their backyard. So the use of our here, I think, is kind of interesting because it helps her to cognitively tie him to ownership in the backyard, thus responsibility for this varmint. It's not so much tying Marcia and Donnie together as much as it's tying Donnie to having responsibility to the backyard. Marcia calls Donnie my husband or my hubby a number of times throughout the blog. The last time she does this is in December 2008, And then in 2009, she no longer claims him in the same way. He just becomes Donnie. Cognitively, she's processing through the marital dissatisfaction by not linking herself to him. The verbal is simply a reflection of how she is now viewing the relationship. One of Marcia's pet names for Donnie is Baby. She uses it a number of times in the blog, mostly when she's writing about him from that hero theme perspective. For instance, in August 2008,
Donnie did the River Gorge race on Saturday. He formed the pace line right off and led the way for about 80 bike riders for several miles. They rode 40 miles uphill both ways from what I'm told, and there was only 1 minute between my baby and the winner.
This stops in 2009. Well, she says,
"Happy anniversary, baby."
At the end of the anniversary post in 2009, it is the only time in her blog that she does not link her nickname for him to a magnifying, heroic event. Interestingly, she uses the word baby in one other context. She writes a blog post about a politician who cheated on his wife. She includes this thought at the end of the entry.
"I value trust above all. Lie to me and we have an issue to work through. Cheat on me and we're done, baby."
Now, I am sure that as Marcia's changing her language here, as she no longer uses us or we, she no longer talks about him as my hubby, she no longer uses baby in this positive, heroic terms, these are not things that Marcia is conscious of changing. I'm sure they're happening naturally. They're just reflecting that inner thought life of hers as opposed to being purposeful. And I want everyone to know I am certainly not negatively critiquing Marcia about her ability to resolve dissonance through many years of marriage. She learned strong coping skills at an early age, and it allowed her to flourish in many stages of her life. In an emotionally domestic violent situation, though, her skill may have allowed her to stay in a dangerous, maladaptive situation. She recognized it enough that she had linguistically uncoupled herself for Donnie, but she had not left him. Remember the one thing she said could cause the end of her marriage? Cheating.
"Cheat on me and we're done, baby."
And it's in spring 2009, as Marcia is ignoring Donnie on the blog and avoiding language that shows them currently as a pair, that police think Donnie was cheating on Marcia. Just days after police and family believe Marcia disappeared, Donnie delivered a card to an old girlfriend. The printed text on the store-bought card read,
"Hang in there. Sometimes life hands you lemons, and then you can make lemonade. Of course, sometimes life pulls down your pants, runs a power sander across your naked butt, then pours lemon juice on your raw, abraded buttocks."
Donnie handwrote a note at the bottom then, saying,
"Hi, girl!
!
Things are better for me now!
!
Call me if you can."
And he gave his phone number. Although the woman who received the card told 48 Hours TV show that it was not true that she had an affair while Marcia was married to Donnie, she declined to speak of it more because she wanted it in her past. From speaking with people in town, I believe that she was probably not involved in an affair with Donnie. But it does seem like he may have been pestering her, wanting to start something back up. In reading one newspaper report, it also seems like Donnie had a dating profile on an online dating site for a few months. A day or two after Marcia probably disappeared, he then used Marcia's phone to call Chattanooga Singles Hotline, which a friend described as a service that people used as a combination hookup site and a phone sex line. Perhaps Donnie's alleged wandering eye had been going on for months, and this explains why Marcia was no longer actively engaging in cognitive dissonance resolution to talk herself back into the marriage. It seems like the script was flipping, and she was having a harder and harder time tamping down her anxiety by reinforcing positive understanding of him. She had started separating from him on the blog and through her word choices.
Chances are, she no longer believed she could work on the marriage, because...
I value trust above all. Lie to me, and we have an issue to work through. Cheat on me, and we're done, baby.
Thanks so much for joining us at Targeted True Crime Podcast. If you're interested in my sources or research, I include a bibliography on my website, www.targetedpodcast.com. If you want to support the show, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and writing a sentence or two about what you like. If you want to connect on social media, I'll include links in the show notes. If you'd like to reach me via email, you can do that at targetedpodcast@gmail.com. Please stay tuned for promos at the end of the podcast and check them out if they sound interesting. As we end, let me emphasize that if you or someone you know is a survivor of domestic violence, you are not alone. There are resources available to you. I've included some contact information in the show notes and on the website about a few organizations. Leaving an abusive relationship can be one of the most dangerous times for a target, so I strongly encourage you to reach out for support. Getting help may be the hardest thing you'll ever do, but it will be worth it. I'm Mo Blackwell, the host of Targeted. Peace, my friends. Peace.
Quiz. What do America's first serial killer, a crime-solving parrot, Jimmy Hoffa, and yours truly have in common? We each honed our craft in the great state of Michigan. I'm Jen Carpenter, the host of So Dead, a true crime podcast where I take the cases I cover seriously. Myself? Not so much. If you want to take a deep dive into cases you've never heard before, I'm your girl. Just call me Scuba Jen. No, definitely don't do that. New episodes of So Dead are released on True Crime Tuesdays, and you can find me wherever you get your podcasts. I'll be waiting. So-